The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
According to a report on ESPN, Rockets are not under pressure to trade James Harden or Russell Westbrook. Rockets front office, led by recently promoted general manager Raphael Stone, remains adamant that neither player will be traded unless a team meets their asking price. The Rockets are willing to go into training camp at the start of the season with Harden and Westbrook on the roster, even if the superstars have expressed strong desire for fresh starts with different franchises. Quote, we're willing to get uncomfortable, a high-ranking Rockets source told ESPN. So how much pressure are the Rockets under to make a trade during tonight's draft? I don't think the pressure is to make a trade during the draft. I think the Rockets are going to wait, and maybe until the trade deadline. But make no mistake, they're going to deal Harden. And my prediction is it will be to the Brooklyn Nets, unless Harden has a change of heart. Harden's about to decide where he goes. And the reason Harden will determine where he goes, and by the way, the Rockets have no recourse here. Of course they have to put out that statement, whether or not it's true. People think, like, with Harden going essentially going public, it leaking out that Harden wants to go to Brooklyn. Stephen A. was arguing with me today on First Take. That limits his leverage because it's only one team now, right? And that team may not have what the Rockets want. In fact, I disagree. My analysis is this increases his leverage. And the reason is it's one thing when the guy's agent is running around saying, he's only going to sign with that one team, so I wouldn't trade I wouldn't mortgage the farm for my guy because he's not going to re-sign with you. He really wants to play in L.A. or Miami or wherever, some warm weather city, a lot of times with no state income tax, right? No, it's not that. It's the player himself basically putting out there that he wants to go to Brooklyn. So if the player is putting that out there, if people are under the impression that that's what Harden wants, why would some other team jump in and grab him? Well, maybe some team in a high kind of position, like moment of leverage in their history, right? Says if we add Harden, we can go all the way. Maybe, I don't know, a team like the Nuggets. The Nuggets would have to trade something they wouldn't want to trade for Harden. But some team like that, on the precipice of something, they go, boy, if we add Harden, we got this. But even then, that's one season they want him for. And they're going to try and convince him to sign. They're unlike. Look, the Boston Celtics had plenty of stuff to go get AD with. They didn't do it. Why don't you think they did it? Because they were convinced that he wasn't going to re-sign in Boston. That's why. Because he was only going to re-sign with the Lakers. Although right now, AD's out there going, don't say I'm with the Lakers, I'm with no team right now. So we'll see. But that was the impression. If the impression is that Harden will only re-sign with the Nets, why would another team give up a piece that's like an MVP caliber piece for Harden? You'd have to find just the right fit. A team who has another disgruntled superstar who's that good. Who is that? How many players can come close to approximating the value for James Harden? First, you have the MVP type players, LeBron. KD, I mean, Harden wants to play with KD, right? Kawhi says no. Giannis, no. How many other guys? Steph, no. None of that's going to work. You're not getting any of those guys for Harden. So then you go one level down. You start looking at guys like Damian Lillard, no. Maybe a Bradley Beal, a 4.5 star player, not a 5 star player, but really not just like a regular all star, something extra. Why would the Wizards do that? Unless they thought, I mean, it's not like they're about to win and then Harden will be disgruntled in D.C. No. No, he's going to wind up in Brooklyn. And the question is only, not whether Brooklyn has a piece. Remember, history of the NBA, team that gets the best player in the deal wins the deal. If you're going to trade an MVP, you need to get something like that back. Even if it's not an MVP, something close to it. So the question is not whether Brooklyn has a piece like that, because they do. They have KD and Kyrie. Neither will be included in the deal. The question is, does Brooklyn have other resources which can be moved? Do they have enough value on their team with guys not named KD or Kyrie, that it can add up in a three-team deal, a four-team deal. That's not important whether they fit the Rockets' needs. But do they have enough spare parts that aren't KD and Kyrie that can add up to at least a four-and-a-half-star player in a deal? I think the answer is yes. Caris LeVert's a nice player. That guy's at least a three-and-a-half-star player. He's not just a starter, right? He's like an all-star-ish type player. And Dinwiddie is, too. I prefer LeVert to Dinwiddie, but Dinwiddie's good. Remember when D'Angelo Russell made the all-star team as an alternate, right? Who was he? Dinwiddie was the guy who couldn't play, so D'Angelo Russell got the touches. Dinwiddie was considered better than D'Angelo Russell while they were on the same team. So if Dinwiddie's like a 3.5-star and Caris LeVert on a good day, maybe a 4-star guy, yeah, you're starting to get to a package since they're both young and inexpensive. If you combine it with some draft picks, yeah, you're starting to get to a package that could net you back a piece that may be attractive enough to the Rockets that you could do a deal. That's why I think Harden's headed to Brooklyn. Not because KD or Kyrie, but because Brooklyn has other assets that even if it doesn't work for the Rockets at this moment, add up to value where if you're creative in a deal, you can put it out there and get in return in a 3-team deal, a 6-team deal, a 15,000-team deal, enough back. When AD wanted to be on the Lakers, Lakers didn't have enough to trade for him. They had LeBron, and that was it. What else did they have that anyone wanted, really, right? But eventually, because they stunk every year, they had the number two pick, Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and this one and that one, and we'll give you a million draft picks. And eventually you got enough where, since AD's value on the market was depressed by the fact that teams believed he'd only re-sign with the Lakers, and Magic and everyone was willing to trade everything for AD, eventually they got it done. I think Brooklyn's already in that position. Max Kellerman Show presented by Progressive Insurance. I want to take some calls on this, Raj. People just want to talk about the Lakers and the Warriors, though. That's all right. Sereno in California, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
How you doing, man? Avid listener, first-time caller. It's actually Sereno.
Sereno.
I just wanted to ask one question. Do you think that if James Harden is traded to the Nets, do the Lakers have enough firepower with Dennis Schroeder to still claim a back-to-back championship?
That's the question. And I would say, yes, they do, for a couple reasons. The Nets would have the most talented team. Usually that wins. But not the reason I didn't take the Lakers this past year, I thought the Lakers were going to win it all this year, not last year. Part of the problem is, when you go all in to bring a few upper echelon pieces together, sometimes the other details, you've used too many of your resources. You can't get those right. The 3-and-D guy you need, something like that. Plus, they need the chemistry to work in order to get it going. So, like LeBron first year in Miami or Cleveland, not quite. So, because of that, if Harden and Kyrie, which those are two pieces don't seem on the surface to fit really well together, with KD coming back from a catastrophic injury, are all thrown together on the same team right away, and the Lakers have continuity with LeBron and AD, and given KD's injury, those might be the two best players on either team, LeBron and AD. A guy normally like a Schroeder wouldn't really be part of a big three, right? He doesn't equal Kyrie, but Kyrie has created chemistry issues where he's gone. And Schroeder is a talented guy who's coming off by far the best year of his career, considering he shot and played defense along with the other stuff he's always done, that I would say the Lakers would have a good chance to defend the title. Jonathan Givony, NBA draft analyst, at Draft Express, old friend of the Maxim Marcellus Show in L.A. By the way, I say the Maxim Marcellus Show, Raj. It was like when people used to call it breakdancing back in the day. And back in the day, it's not called breakdancing. It's called breaking. the Max and Marcellus show. We just called it Max and Marcellus, not the Max. And now I am already referring to it the way it used to drive me crazy. Anyway.
You're guilty of it.
That's right. Jonathan Gavoni on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Jonathan, are you there?
Sure am. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. Love your draft analysis. Draft Express. That's how I got ready for the draft every year. Who goes number one in this draft, Jonathan?
Talking to teams around the league, I've probably spoken with half the GMs over the last 36 hours. Almost everybody has Anthony Edwards pegged right now at number one. In my gut, I wonder if there's going to be a pump fake here at the last minute, and it ends up being LaMelo. But, you know, if I have to go off the reporting that I've done, and the reporting indicates it's going to be Anthony Edwards, unless there is a trade, you know. So, honestly, anything can happen.
You know, when I look at this draft, you know who I'd take first, Jonathan? I would take Tyrese Halliburton. Like, I understand why with a number one pick you want more upside than that. I get that. But when I look at Edwards, if people are worried about his love of the game and he can't really shoot from three, and LaMelo Ball also not a really a shooter, and Wiseman too easily approximated by, you know, bigs that are available on the open market every year, I look on the other hand at Halliburton. I see a dude with size, with a real passing ability and court vision, who creates chemistry, who's built like a defender, he's not great in ISO right now, but who knows? He's 20 years old. He's still getting stronger. He's still going to add to his game. I look at him the way I saw Jamal Adams in the draft a couple years ago in the NFL. Like, you know what? How about just getting a guy you know is guaranteed to make any team he's on better? What about Halliburton?
There are definitely GMs who agree with you. A lot of people are petrified of the top three. They are scared to take LaMelo, scared to take Edwards, and they just think that you could find James Wiseman in free agency or that caliber of player. And they say, why not Tyrese Halliburton? He has the highest floor of any player in the draft. You know he's going to be a good NBA player. We're not sure that any of those guys at the top are going to be good NBA players. There's real bust potential with all of them. I personally don't think LaMelo Ball is going to be a bust, but I could see the argument why people would be scared about his body of work. They see, you know, the crazy shots and the bad defense and the turnovers and the lack of strength, and they say, and that guy's just too far away. But, I mean, you just don't find a 6'7 point guard with that kind of star power who can handle the ball, make every pass every day. And that's why, you know, I would gravitate towards him, but I totally understand the argument why people would, you know, play it safe and go for Halliburton instead.
You know what it reminds me of? The draft, obviously Carl Anthony Towns was going to go one. And then after that, there were questions, certain questions about D'Angelo Russell and Okafor, and you really wanted to take Porzingis. But I remember the Knicks drafting fourth that year thinking, like, that's probably, if you can't draft first, that's probably where you want to be. Or when you mentioned the guy with the highest floor, it reminds me of, like, Tatum in that draft. You knew Tatum was going to be pretty good, right? Maybe not this good, but pretty good. And so when I say, who do you think is the comp for a guy like Halliburton?
It's a great question. I mean, a lot of people compare him to Lonzo Ball, you know, which is funny because we're talking about Lonzo's brother potentially going ahead
ugly?
Of him. What's that? Yeah, ugly shot, not really an ISO guy, not really a pick-and-roll guy, but just does all the little things, great passer, great off-the-ball defender, you know, good shooter with his feet set. I mean, Lonzo shot over 40% for three at UCLA. So, I mean, that's the comp that you're hearing, and, you know, is that worthy of going top three? In a draft like this, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking more like not Ingram, but like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or someone like that. Like a guy who, I don't know if he'll ever be a superstar, but he's already pretty damn good, you know, and can do a lot of things. Also, his shot is ugly, but it's not broken looking. Like Lonzo's look broken to me. This doesn't look like a broken shot, just like a funky kind of shot. What do you, is this a repeatable delivery that Halliburton has?
I think with his feet set, 100%, I buy it because it's gone in for 2 years and it's gone in at the FIBA level. Everywhere he's played, he's made shots. And so that's not a broken shot. The question is he going to be able to shoot off the dribble? Because that's something that he didn't really do definitely not in his freshman year at Iowa State, and not really that much in his sophomore year, too. And to be a point guard in the NBA these days, you have to be able to shoot off the dribble because they're going to go under a lot, and they're going to try and shrink the floor, and you need to be able to punish defenses, especially at the end of the clock. And that's where the question marks with Haliburton come into play.
What about Toppin? That's a guy like... I've been fooled before in the draft. I'm trying to remember by who, but like by older players who I thought were really good, but in fact, they were just a couple years older than everybody, right? What's his upside, do you think?
I think realistically, he's a John Collins type player. You know, John Collins averaged, 20 points a game this year or close to it and 10 rebounds and super high effort guy, great finisher, very efficient player. Obi Toppin is a very, very good offensive player. The question is, are you going to be able to lean on him defensively? Is he going to be able to hold his own? He's very thin. You know, he's 218 pounds, and he played primarily at center at Dayton in a spread offense with shooting and passing all around him. And so you wonder, is he going to be able to guard those nuclear athletes that the NBA has at the four? Because he's very upright. He has a very narrow base. And, like I said, he's not really strong enough to guard traditional big men. So that's where the real question marks are going to come into play. But offensively, I think he's going to translate. He's going to be a very good player in the NBA.
Now, who cares who the Wolves get? Because no one cares about the Timberwolves. Who cares who the Knicks get? Because I'm just laughing at Knicks fans. I used to be one, hoping for anything good. Let's talk about, there are two topics for me in the draft that are, the sexiest. One is, what do the Warriors do? It looks like Wiseman, according to everyone. Does that actually work? Do you think they would stick with Wiggins and Wiseman? We had Joe Lacob on First Take today, and he sounded like he thought that, but who knows if that's real. Or do you think that they could package something and get a ready-made star right now to go with Steph and Clay and Dre? And then the other is LaMelo Ball. What do you think of LaMelo Ball? A guy who, projects everywhere from superstar to disappointment. Let's start with the Warriors. What do you think they do, and do you think it's a good idea?
It sounds like they're really torn there in their war room. There's half of the front office says, let's just take the guy who is going to be the most useful player for us in trying to return to the NBA Finals next year. We've got a great team already. We just don't have anything at center. James Wiseman is physically ready to step into an NBA game tomorrow. He's going to run the floor. He's going to finish lobs. He's going to bring energy as a rebounder. And that, they think, is enough. LaMelo Ball is going to take time, and you probably need to hand him the keys to an offense. But the other school of thought in the front office says LaMelo Ball is going to be the best player from this draft 5 years from now. And that's what we're trying to do here. These guys, Steph and Clay and Draymond, they're probably not going to be with us 5 years from now. And so are we making a huge mistake passing on a player who we feel is the best talent in the draft?
Answer, right? Potentially it could be that both things are true, that Wiseman would be more useful now and it could grab you a championship, but that LaMelo would be a better idea 5 years from now. And it depends on how you value the position that the Warriors are in now, how close do you believe they are to a championship, and could Wiseman put them over the top? There may not be a right answer. It may be just an issue of preference, what that front office values. But there is a right answer, Raj, when it comes to Jonathan Givony. Best of the best. Draft analysis at Draft Express. Thank you, Jonathan, for joining me on the show. And his name is Jonathan, not Jonathan, which I just said, Raj, because I'm speaking very fast. Did the Breeze injury stop the Saints? Did it drop them in my power rankings? And listen to me, if you're listening to my voice right now and you're like, I have to stick around to find out if the Saints went up or down in Max Kellerman's power rankings, you need to get a hobby. Pick up chess. Read a book. What's the matter with you, you degenerate?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
You can't write a rhyme with broken thumbs. You can't rap with collapsed lungs. It's a line from my late great brother Sam, Raj. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. That's all I could think about when I heard about the collapsed lungs, my brother's sure. Lyric.
He had bars. Your brother had bars.
Oh, my God. I can't repeat them on the air, but oh, my God. Ask Lil Wayne. He's heard them. Or ask Fab Five Freddy, because Fab Five Freddy used to actually observe battles. Let me tell you something. Drew Brees is tough as nails. You collapsed lung and crushed, you fractured ribs on both sides. He didn't take himself out. Not right away. Woo, that guy's tough. Robinson Cano tests positive for PEDs, forfeits the entire upcoming season and his $24 million salary. Now, Cano is 37 years old. Maybe he needs them to perform nowadays, or maybe he's always needed them. He was a monster with the Yankees and with Seattle, but not as consistently with Seattle because he was an older player. But with the Yankees, year in and year out, he had better than a .350 on base, better than a .500 slugging. Played 162, played a full season most years. Was an 8-time All-Star, finished in the top 5 in MVP voting 4 times. Was a 2-time Gold Glove winner. It's a Hall of Fame resume. But unlike someone like A-Rod, who got busted late, or Barry Bonds, right? Barry Bonds went from one of the 3 or 4 greatest left fielders who ever lived, and arguably the greatest left fielder who ever lived, to the greatest hitter of all time at the age of 35. And he doubled his home run to at bat ratio because he's pretty obvious. How do you think that happened? But Bonds was already a Hall of Famer first ballot when he started doing that. And unless you think cheating disqualifies someone, which I don't think it does. I mean, Gaylord Perry, right? The spitter in me, whatever, right? These guys, that's fine, but juicing. The point is, he was already a Hall of Famer when he started juicing. Bonds, to me, is a Hall of Famer. Clemens, borderline case.
All right.
Looks like you could tell when he started juicing, but... I'm going to get to the power rankings in a second, Raj. Looks like you could tell when he started juicing, but it's unclear, and he already kind of a borderline Hall of Famer. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, obviously just creations of the juice. They were never going to get into the Hall of Fame without them. Cano, hard to say. Hard to say when he started. And he's not such a slam dunk Hall of Famer like someone like A-Rod or Barry Bonds was, that those kind of questions might not keep him out. 888-SAY-ESPN. You ready for my power rankings, Raj? I want to finally get to them. Don't stop procrastinating. Let me get to the power rankings.
No bias.
I really like football.
Just facts.
Don't get it crooked here, what I'm saying.
Max's NFL power rankings.
I've been waiting all break, man. I wanted to know how far the Saints would drop. I wanted to know if you still had Chiefs number one. That's all I've been waiting for. Right. So last week you had the Ravens at number 5. Your guy couldn't get it done again in the big light. So who do you have here at number 5?
I have the Packers at 5 this week, Raj. Hmm. I had the Packers at 5 because they're coming off a win. It wasn't the most impressive win. It wasn't their most impressive win. And the Packers' defense has never kind of come around. But they do have Aaron Rodgers. They have Jones in a running game. Rodgers has a lead receiver. He has his tackles. The Packers are going to be difficult to beat. But they did not have the kind of dominant performance that would have put them in my top 4 or even 3, maybe. Who's next?
All right. Next, you had the Bills in there. Another team. They lost to the Hail Murray. So who do you got number 4 this week?
Yeah. At number 4, coming in just ahead of the Packers, mainly because they spanked them a couple weeks ago, the Bucs. Bucs bounce back with Brady. Hard, boy. Like, if they get embarrassed, if they're coming off a bad game, and it doesn't surprise me, one thing a Brady-led team will not do is have, like, mental breakdowns in a game and then repeat that with another sloppy effort. No, they're going to come back on point. They did. And more than that even, they have a real defense. The Bucs have an elite defense and a quarterback who knows how to not make mistakes with weapons all around him. I was tempted to put the Packers ahead of them, but the way the Bucs beat them up a couple weeks ago, I can't. Bucs are at 4.
All right. And you had the Steelers, who you like to mention as your favorite childhood team when you watched it on TV a little bit. Steelers were number 3 last week. Who's 3 now?
The New Orleans Saints, who could be 2. The Saints could be 2, except that Breeze is hurt. And that no matter how you slice it, he's going to be out no fewer than 2 weeks, but maybe a lot longer. My guess would be, if they say 2 to 3, double it. But even if you took the high end of, like they say, 2 to 3, so call it 3. Now double that, call that 6. They're still going to have a couple games left before the end of the year. And Jameis Winston went 7-9 with the Bucs last season. So if he goes around 500 in those games, if he goes 2-3 over the next 5 weeks, they're going to be sitting on 9 wins when Drew Brees gets back. I mean, messing around, it might be an 11-win team even without Drew Brees for a long stretch. They're still in the top 3, but I dropped them based on Brees' injury.
Okay, and real quick, one-word answer. Who would you rather have as the backup of the Saints, Bridgewater or Jameis?
Bridgewater. Rather have Bridgewater. But, you know, he got expensive.
I say one word. Okay, you had the Saints at number 2 last week. You mentioned why they fell. So all I want to know is, who is number 2 this week? Do we have a new number 1, Max?
Raj, we have a new number 2.
Oh, you got me. You got me, dog.
Pittsburgh Steelers come in second. The Steelers, you know what occurs to me, Raj? The Steelers, what's the old saying? Like, there are 3 phases of the game, right? You have offense, defense, and special teams. And what does Belichick always make sure that the Patriots are? He's better at 2 of the 3. He's going to get you in 2 of those 3 departments. He'll have the better team. That's the Steelers this year. The Steelers are going to beat you in 2 of the 3 phases. They will, like the Titans. That was a close game. Titans came back on them. Steelers had better special teams, and that was the difference in the game. And so this is a team without a lot of margin for error. They don't have an overwhelming offense, but they might be better than your offense that week. They have a real good defense, maybe you can run on them that week, and they got good special teams, right? They're going to make sure, Tomlin will make sure 2 of the 3 are better than your teams that week. Now, because they don't have a lot of room for error, they're on point. Because they don't get sloppy. They're not the kind of team that can just not, you know, believe the headlines. Tomlin wouldn't let them anyway, but they can't, and they know it. So that actually makes them a better team. They're second, but the Chiefs are number 1. I told you, even to start this year when, but the Chiefs aren't number 1. They had to come back on all these teams. If you were doing power rankings in the playoffs, starting with the first week that they were in the playoffs last year, you wouldn't have had them number 1, right? They had to come back on every team in the playoffs. They had to come back on the Texans. They were down big. Then they were down 2 scores to the Titans. Then they were down in the Super Bowl by 2 scores in the fourth quarter, and they won every game. So when I saw them fall down early and have to come back on teams and people are holding it against them, you're all forgetting they got Patrick Mahomes? Ain't nothing for Patrick Mahomes. Let alone when they start getting rolling and they don't have to come back on teams anymore. You want to try and come back on the Chiefs? Good luck. The Chiefs are the best team in football. I suspect as long as they have Mahomes with Andy Reid, I'm going to think they're the best team in football every year. You know, I thought they were the best last year. I thought they're the best this year. Even the year before, and they didn't even have a defense at that point. Looking back at it, they were the best. They were lucky that there was a pre-snap penalty that erased Tom Brady's interception that ended the AFC Championship game. Or else they'd have beaten the Rams in the Super Bowl. They'd be working on a three-peat right now. So there are my power rankings, Raj. Chiefs 1, Steelers 2. Saints 3. Remember that was the tease? Where do I rank the Saints? Now you know. So you can rest easy. But I can tell you something right now. There's more to come on the Max Kellerman Show. Because your take, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Your last take is next.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast. You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
It's your last take today. Jesse in Wisconsin, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Go.
Yeah, I was wondering, can you do like the 5 worst teams, and do you think the Kansas City, the nowadays Patriots?
In what sport? We're talking about the NFL?
NFL, yeah.
I can give you the 3 worst teams off the top of my head. 3 worst teams are the Jets, number 1. That's the worst team in football. Number 2 would be Jacksonville. And number 3 is Washington. Those are the 3 worst. After that, you can say, like, the Panthers. I don't know. The Panthers, the defense is going in the wrong direction, but they don't look like one of the most miserable teams you can think of, you know? But the 3 I gave you are bad teams. Kenny in Dallas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, I wanted to know, do you think the Raiders will re-sign Derek Carr if he makes it to the playoffs? And if Josh Jacobs asks for a huge contract, do you think they let him walk because of how good Booker's playing?
Well, first, let me just tell the director, if you see that I'm having a little allergy situation and I'm picking my nose or blowing my nose, just cut away and show something for that moment. Let me digging up my nose with a tissue, Raj. It's not nice for the people on ESPN Plus. I don't know if the Raiders re-sign Derek Carr. I think it really Derek Carr's future is going to come down to what he does right now. The Raiders seem to be trending in the right direction, and he's beaten Patrick Mahomes once. If he does it again. But it really comes down to, does John Gruden believe in Derek Carr and think that he can win a Super Bowl with him? And honestly, the jury is still out for me. I go week to week with Derek Carr. This is throughout his entire career, really. You know, like, ooh, he's one of the best young quarterbacks. Nah, you can't really, I don't know, his future is limited. I think he quit on his team. No, he just showed heart, you know? Courtney in Michigan, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Huge fan, first-time caller. Running it back to the Raiders there, I'm looking more on next year and their projections. Obviously, if they beat the Kansas City Chiefs again this year, that's going to be 2-0 for Derek Carr and John Gruden. Yeah. But next year with Justin Herbert and that defense reloaded, being healthy, do you think they have a chance over the Raiders to be contenders?
I do. I love Justin Herbert. It's the Chargers or one of these snake-bit franchises, man. Them and the Falcons. It's always the same. They'll figure out a way to lose. You would think that with Justin Herbert, that could turn around. He's just so talented. News from Cowboys. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Someone wrote Courtney, and I read that as Cowboys. Courtney just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Ask about the Chargers and Justin Herbert. Bo in California, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Bo. Hey, Max. I just wanted to know if the Steelers beat the Jaguars this weekend, and the Raiders lose, or the Raiders beat the Chiefs. Will you finally give the Steelers the respect they deserve and be number one?
Nah, I probably still call the Chiefs the best team in football. Even if I just think that the Raiders have their number. You know, I got to be honest. I don't believe anyone's better than the Chiefs. And merit based, you're right. I should say Steelers, but this is who I think is actually the best team. If the Chiefs lost to another team, I'd make some other excuse. That's news from Max Kellerman Nation. Bo just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper calling line. I'll be back tomorrow. He's going number one tonight. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.